Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
Hitting the road one more time, Plentywood, Montana. It is the KATQ Northeast Montana Farm Expo. Welcome from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Had a great time. We'll talk about that and visiting yesterday many places around northeastern Montana. But we are talking ag in a serious way here today at the Farm Expo. Of course, you guys know we're probably right in the heart of pheasant country. I mean, pulse country. But there is a correlation to that, I think, as well. And we've got a good show lined up here. And actually, the Farm Expo, it looks packed. There's good attendance here today, too. So we got a good show from Montana for Montana's Voices of Montana. Tom Schultz alongside. Ken Adablue is going to be running around, popping into some of these booths as well, and checking in with folks like TerraClear. Also to my right over here is Traders Dispatch. Susie's there. But a lot of folks are here as well. Montana Farmers Union. You've got Mertis Implement. I grew up with a Mertis. I wonder if that's the same dude. I could use a tractor. So again, welcome. It's Friday. I know only two more working days this week, and these farmers in front of us sure know that. So I mentioned Ken Adablue, who's here, co-hosted today by Coulter Brown, who probably knows about everybody in this room. Coulter, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tom. I don't know if I know everybody here, but it sure is fun to put a little farm news here on Voices of Montana. It'll be more than a little today. We're excited to be here at the KATQ Northeast Montana Farm Expo.
So who have you got? Why don't you give us a little bit of the lineup later on, and then you've got three characters in front of you that they've been poking you for the last 10 minutes here, I think.
That's right, Tom. Well, yeah. We are going to cover a whole lot here. You know, later on in the show, we'll be talking with Jeannie Rood from Pro Co-op. We're going to talk Pulse Crops with Matt Franks and Tim McGreevy. But right now, I've got a few farmers that have joined us here. You know, very dignitaries in the farming industry here. Nice. We've got Clayton Lohr, Montana Grain Growers President from Devon over in Toole County. We've got Tanner Jorgensen, who's on the board for the U.S. Durham Growers from Dagmar, and Terry Onvik, Chairman of the Montana Wheat and Barley Committee. So appreciate you guys being here this morning with us. And Terry, I might start with you because you've been around this Farm Expo for a while. You were actually at some of the very first ones.
Actually, I was. When I was extension agent, I helped set this thing up. So, yeah, I don't want to date myself because it's been a lot of years. So, yeah, it's been a very good program, a very good show for a lot of years, and we've had very good participation. So, pretty happy.
You bet. Well, tell about what this means for the local community. I mean, Plentywood is a long ways from a lot of the rest of Montana, but this is a big deal for farmers in northeast Montana.
Well, I've got Tim McGreevy looking over my shoulder over here, and he's a big pulse guy, so I gotta kind of plug that a little bit. You know, historically, Sheridan County farmers have been raising Durham for years and years and years. This little corner of the state leads the state, probably one of the leading producers in the United States anyway. So probably about 20, 25 years ago, I think, we started shifting into some of the pulse crops to try and help out. At first, it was just a way to help reduce our fallow acres, try to maybe not have as much idle acres, if you will. And so we started rotating in with some of the pulse crops. Everybody's thinking, boy, we still got to raise our Durham, though, you know. So, and as it turned out, it turned into a great rotation. Now we're raising more, better quality Durham, I think. We always raise good Durham, by the way. But anyway, I think what it's done for us has helped to create another revenue stream for our producers. And shows like this help showcase that. You look at out across here, you look at all the speakers we've had that have emphasized the pulse crop production, in our case Durham growers as well. With the Wheat and Barley Committee that I'm on, we'd like to promote both the research and education that goes along with that. So anyway, I guess I'll shut up for now and let you take over.
No, I appreciate you putting this all in context of what ag in this part of the world looks like. And I may ask Tanner Jorgensen, of course, on the board of the U.S. Durham Growers, but we're right on the cusp of starting a new growing season here. What's the feel from your neighbors, the farmers in the area? What are they thinking about growing crops here in 2025?
You know, I think it's going to be another year of challenges, but every year has its challenges, whether it's drought, it's fertilizer prices, it's tariffs, whatever it might be. It's just like another year for us. We're always going to grow Durham. We're always going to grow peas. We're always going to grow lentils. And if you're crazy like we are, you're going to throw some canola because you like to lose money. So it'll be a good year no matter what. I think if you plan for a failure, you're always going to have a failure. So we're planning for a really good year.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And, of course, you're part of a generational farming operation here. Compare what it's like now to maybe your dad. Or what's different on your operation now than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
Well, the size is the biggest one. I mean, I picked up a whole bunch of ground here this spring, which I'm really excited for. It's always fun to farm some new ground. And my landlord is awesome. He actually might come help us this spring, too. I think it's a whole different set of challenges versus, like, the 1980s or the 1970s or whatever you might have. Hard to compare because I wasn't here. But it's still fun to sit and visit with my dad. We have our morning powwows over coffee every day, you know, and it's fun to compare and contrast the differences. In the 80s, you didn't spend any money. You know, if you were really feeling fancy, you might throw 50 pounds of urea in the drill and that was it. Where now, you know, you're throwing 150 pounds of urea plus whatever else out, hoping it'll rain. And so I think we've got a lot more money tied up already into the year, and we haven't even turned a wheel. Heck, the drills aren't even hooked up right now. So just a different time, but it'll be fun nonetheless.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And for the hard questions, that's why we've got Clayton Lohr here, Montana Grain Growers President. And Clayton, I think Tanner hits a lot of those nails on the head here with just the uncertainty that farmers are dealing with, not just the crop price, but the input costs. I mean, as we look at some of these global levels, what the administration is doing with tariffs, farmers are in a hard spot right now. How do you communicate that as the Montana grain growers to let those policymakers know what's going on in farm country?
Well, Coulter, you're right. It's been a hot topic. You know, ever since I was at Commodity Classic in Denver at the start of this month, I think I've done 8 or 9 interviews about tariffs. And boy, I hate to say it. I didn't want to be a semi-expert. I'm not a full expert. I just know a little bit, and then say it with confidence so people like Tanner will believe it. But you know, we did, as Montana grain growers, on our drive out here, stopped in Harlem, so we still had service before going from there to Malta, so we could get on a Zoom meeting with Senator Daines and Senator Sheehy's offices at the same time, and we talked to them about the real impacts, because, you know, when you're in the middle of the country and you're talking about a tariff with our neighbor to the north in Canada, some people don't understand how much we really rely on each other in this northern tier. I mean, I've heard it talked about several times here in Plentywood, how they can see the plant where they make the urea, and they don't know if they're going to be able to get any. And so that's a real problem. And then, like you said, too, you know, we had one of our officers go through the pricing of fertilizer right now, and with the amount of fertilizer it takes for him to raise a full winter wheat crop, you know, this ECAP payment that's coming out, they already rolled it out, sign-ups are ready, and it doesn't even cover how much more he's going to spend an acre on fertilizer. So it's a hot-button issue, and we're just doing our best to talk to our lawmakers and inform the public of what's going on.
Well, I do want to spend just a second on that ECAP program, just rolled out this week for applications. I mean, you mentioned the cost structure in farming right now. It's not going to cover it, but it's, what, $15 to $45 an acre we're talking for producers. Going to make a difference to at least get started on this crop.
Yeah, it will make a difference. But at the same time, you know, I know at least in my country, you know, Ponderay, Toole, Liberty, Glacier counties, there were a lot of operating notes approved this spring with that payment on the books. And so when you look at it from that perspective, I mean, it was necessary. And I've taken a lot of pride in the fact that we as Montana grain growers got to have a Zoom meeting in July, this last July, with Senator Bozeman out of Arkansas, who was then the ranking member on the Senate Ag Committee and now the chairman. And I got to tell the story of farming where I have, because you're no stranger to the last 4 years of extreme drought. And when I got done telling my story, I really felt heard. And then when we were in D.C. here this last January, his staffer on the Senate Ag Committee came up to me and told me ever since we had that Zoom meeting, he's been telling my story to anybody who'd listen in Washington, D.C. And he told all of his colleagues, he said, when this CR comes out, don't you dare vote for it unless there's help for agriculture. And so to have that sort of impact has been pretty special.
Well, we appreciate what you're doing to advocate for agriculture, Clayton. And I want to talk with Terry. Of course, your role on the Montana Wheat and Barley Committee. That's really trying to benefit farmers across the state who are investing funds to develop markets and develop research. And you guys have a big event coming up next week to kind of focus on research.
We do. And to preface that, you know, the assessment that farmers pay when they sell their grain is about 2.5 cents per bushel for wheat, and for about 3.5 per hundredweight for barley. And that money comes into the Wheat and Barley Committee, and we use those funds for a variety of stuff. A big one is research at Montana State University. About half our budget, about $2 million, goes into that program. So coming up here, we have our own form of March Madness coming up next Monday afternoon. What we do is we go on campus at MSU, and what happens is the graduate students will come and present their graduate studies. And so some of the projects that we fund, that we reading programs, everything you can think of, sawfly research, I mean all the wheat variety and barley variety research that's being done, we actually contribute towards those programs in the form of grants. So they're going to share through their students, who are going to be our future researchers, we hope, what kind of progress they've made with some of the efforts they're doing. And so we get a chance to have them present to us, little 5-minute format. We sit and judge them, and we're going to award prizes, if you will, financial prizes to help them with their cost of going to school, for God's sake, you know. But anyway, for the main thing, though, is for them to give them a chance to present to us what they're doing. So it kind of gives us an idea what the research monies that we put in there are doing for us and for the producers.
You bet. Well, it's such a valuable relationship between MSU and the producers, and this is a great opportunity to give feedback. You know, as we get up on the break here, I want to loop in Tanner one more time here. We've talked about Durham. This is one of the biggest corners of the world for Durham, I think. Northeast Montana, Northwest North Dakota. I mean, how does that Durham market look as we prepare to enter 2025? You're on the board, so you know exactly what's coming down the pike here. Of course, a lot of our listeners may not know Durham is what we use to make pasta. So you're the guy that's in charge of pasta here in Northeast Montana.
Well,
by the way, I love you. Okay.
Pasta.
Yeah.
Eat more of it, please.
Okay, yeah, you got it.
You know, the tariffs have kind of helped the price of Durham, because we are a net importer of Durham out of Canada. Has it made up for the increase in fertilizer prices? No. And now they increase the carry, Durham prices have dropped back down, and we kind of figured that would happen. We go to a lot of North Dakota State seminars. One of their economists predicted this, I guess you could say. Slight rise in the Durham market. Sell it if you need to, otherwise hold on to it. And that's where we're at right now. I think it's going to be a break-even year for Durham, honestly. It is what it is, you know, like, first year I started farming, my dad said, well, you broke even, you must be doing something right. So that should tell you something in my mind. Thank God for peas and lentils, because Durham's a break even and canola's a loser right now, unfortunately.
Well, I think that's a great segue, because after the break, we're going to talk about peas and lentils. But I'm glad we got to squeeze Durham in, such a big part of agriculture here. Tom, we're going to cover a lot of farm news here on the show today. Appreciate you letting us kind of hijack your show today.
I love it. There's a lot to learn about this, too. And I just want to thank you guys for being leaders in your industry as well, and willing to take on that mantle, because nothing moves forward unless there's people like you and more of you in your industry doing things like this. So, you know, super job. And get back to work on it, right? Yeah,
right.
I mean, it's never. So we're going to send right now. Go ahead, Ken. We're going to send, and thank you guys for being here. That is Clayton Lohr, Tanner Jorgensen, and Terry Anvik. Good stuff, you guys, along with Coulter Brown from the Northern Ag Network. We'll take a break in just a little bit,
Thank you very much, Tom. Yep. Excited to be talking with Kurt Wiggers. He's the regional account manager for Central Montana for TerraClear. First of all, tell us about this company, because this is a fascinating subject to me, just essentially where you're based and what you do.
Well, I'm based out of the Great Falls area, and I've got 40 counties in Montana that I travel. And what we do is we try to help producers address the issue of rocks in their field. And our slogan is freedom from rocks, freedom to farm. And what we do is we use technology to do it. We have some software programs where we take drone imagery and we run it through those programs, and it will identify the rocks. It will give them a map so that they can go from rock to rock to pick those rocks, get their fields clean, safe from damaging their equipment, and make the land a little more efficient.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Not only is it an issue where you're probably saving a lot of money in terms of damage to the lack of damage to your equipment you're going to have, but obviously makes it a much more productive process.
So, and we also do, we'll have a picker head that we can put onto a skid steer or a track machine and go out and pick rock for you if that's what you want. But, you know, the key in the, to the efficiency is the mapping, being able to know where the rocks are, identify those rocks, and save that time in the field from having to go out and search for them.
Essentially, this is done through drone technology, correct? Or?
Yeah, we use drone technology, and then some of the software is proprietary that uses a lot of AI. So we're bringing AI into ag.
How long have you been doing this? And, I mean, just kind of tell us how the business is going in this day and age.
So TerraClear was started in late 2017, and the founder grew up on a farm. And his dad had sent him out to the field to pick rocks. And, you know, he had sold some software companies by that point, so was well-versed in the software industry. And he said, you know, there's got to be a better way. And this is what he developed. So it's been around for about 8 years. And it's one of those things that we're just getting introduced into this part of the country. They have done it in the central states, Iowa, Minnesota, for a few years now. And we're just getting it developed into this country.
Well, so it's a pleasure to meet you. Kurt Wiggers, the Regional Account Manager for Central Montana and TerraClear. Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
I appreciate you visiting with me today.
Yeah, Ken.
Just a wonderful business, one of the many businesses here at this event. And I'll send it back to Tom Schultz. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate that. And that, again, is TerraClear. I couldn't see him. He's behind this row of sponsors here. I want to throw out a few names. Cahill Seeds, Morton Buildings is here. You got Case IH alongside, far side over there. They're Sheridan Electric Cooperative and AgWest. It is, it's a nice Northeast Montana KATQ Farm Expo going on. Here's Voices Up Montana Live from the KATQ Northeast Montana Farm Expo. Love coming up here. We've got more visiting to do. Ken Edelblue's out there popping around. Maybe it's Farm Bureau. Maybe it's Columbia Grain. Maybe it's North 40 Ag. Right now, though, back center stage here, Coulter Brown. We're talking what? Farm Ag News here?
You bet. We're at the KATQ Northeast Montana Farm Expo. You bet we're going to talk some
Center
farm news
Center Farm
here.
Universe, right?
Well, and of course, if we're here in Northeast Montana, you got to talk about pulse crops, because this is really where we started raising pulse crops in Montana. And if you're unfamiliar, of course, that's dry peas, chickpeas, lentils that we raise here. And we've got two good guests to join us here. Tim McGreevy, CEO of the USA Dry Pea and Lentil Council. Tim, thank you for being here in Northeast Montana. And then, of course, Matt Franks with Columbia Grain joining us here locally. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, Tim, I might start off with you as we talk about pulse crops. And, boy, that's been in a market and a commodity that sort of evolved in the farming industry here. It started as something that I think we got into because of the opportunities to export pulses to India. Now, that market changed quite a bit, but farmers are still growing pulses, I think, because they're agronomically advantageous, but also economically.
Oh, economically, they've just a tremendous crop in the rotation, no question about it. And it's been really exciting. I mean, obviously, the export markets are, you know, we export over half of the product that we produce in the country. But the exciting part is we're really increasing in the domestic market as well, with some really terrific, innovative products that are coming down the line for people to consume. So remember to eat more pulses, Colt.
Where do those pulses end up domestically?
Wow. Well, you know, there's so much. You know, we have the AGT plant, of course. We have a lot of the purists, all these folks that are making them into fractions, which is really exciting, right? Going into protein drinks, going into all kinds of different products, into Cheeto-type products made with chickpeas. We have beautiful soup mixes still that are just easy to use, easy, quick to cook. You know, you don't have to spend a lot of time, but, you know, lentils, you don't have to cook them for about 30 to 40 minutes. Come on. I mean, we need to have more lentils for breakfast. That's what I'm advocating at this show, is that farmers who raise these lentils should have them for breakfast every single day and help lower their cholesterol, help lower their chance for heart disease, help with obesity issues. These crops are tremendous for your health, and they're also tremendous for your soils.
Well, Tim, we appreciate you being here. And I want to talk with Matt Franks. Of course, Matt, you've got the facility here just, I don't know, not even a half mile from where we're standing right now. Talk about what Columbia Grain has put together with the pulse processing facility.
Well, many years ago, Columbia Grain started very small in town at the smaller elevator. As the industry grew and, you know, we were able to buy a lot more, we were able to export a lot more, and with things changing in the export market going to India, we needed to be able to have the capacity to process more product in bags to export to other countries. So Columbia Grain saw an opportunity to invest heavily in the Sheridan County area, not only to assist our farmers finding homes for their product, but also just to keep that industry moving.
Well, put that in perspective a little bit for us. I mean, having that processing facility, what does that mean? What kind of dollars is that adding? Jobs? I mean, what sort of area do you serve? How far do these pulses come into you?
Well, I mean, we're drawing in plenty in 150-mile radius, I would guess, you know, multiple counties. It has opened up, you know, we're employing 25 to 30 people. It's always swinging a little bit. So, you know, it's definitely helped out the community, creating jobs. And also without the farmer ability to market their product at a premium into a processed market, they're either going to have to go farther distances with their product. They're going to have to go north, which we don't want to happen. So being able to do it locally, as you know, has really helped support that.
Mm-hmm. And we talk about the importance of value added. I mean, it's adding value to crops that are raised here in Montana. Because frankly, Montana agriculture, most of our crops, commodities, cattle, whatever it is, they leave the state to have value added. You're doing it right here.
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, good. Well, Tim, talk to us a little about where the pulse market sits today. I mean, really any sort of agricultural market right now has seen a lot of uncertainty and disturbance recently. What's going on with pulses? What are you really watching?
Well, certainly there's a lot of uncertainty in every market, but pulses right now actually are fairly, you know, competitively priced. Our prices are above our 10-year averages by quite a bit right now. Stocks are actually pretty low for peas, lentils, and chickpeas in the United States and across the world. So demand worldwide has been pretty strong. Of course, you know, we have tariffs looming, just like your previous guest talked about. We're not immune to that, so there's a lot of uncertainty. We're obviously hoping the president will have quick negotiations as we're going through this little tariff situation. But, you know, that could hurt us a little bit. But, again, domestically we're pretty strong and growing.
And you're trying to build markets internationally as well. Last year, one of our farm broadcasters was able to join the Montana Pulse Crop Committee in Colombia, promoting Montana pulses. So that's something you're doing all over the globe.
Yeah, we actually have 8 offices overseas that promote pulses every single day, Montana pulses. You know, Montana is the largest pulse producing state in the country, 1.5 million acres. Great quality products here that customers want worldwide. And so, you know, it's a positive message. And plus, these are just great crops for your health, right? They're great crops for soil health, and we need to raise more of them.
You bet. Well, and part of your role is advocacy as well, advocating on behalf of the industry. We talked about the ECAP payments. That's going to be a big deal for pulse growers this year.
Yeah, no question about it. We encourage all of our farmers to get to their FSA offices or go online and sign up for the ECAP payments. You know, it's worth over $16 an acre for peas right now, $19 for lentils, a little over that. Chickpeas are at 24 cents for large chickpeas, and right now small chickpeas at 31 cents, so or $31 an acre. So get in there and get those payments. Those are going to be helpful. We also had the mask payments as well, the market assistance for specialty crops, which was worth about $9 to $10 an acre. And, you know, a little bit earlier in January. So, you know, every little bit helps in these tough times where input costs are up. And we're working hard as an organization to make sure that we have great markets and also the risk management tools that growers need to be successful.
You bet. Well, we appreciate what you're doing to help these growers out. Before we bounce over to Ken Adelblue, Matt, I want to have you give one more plug for just the role Columbia Grain plays here in the community, supporting local projects. And you also mentioned you're needing a little help over there at the plant, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we are always hiring. Always hiring. you know, it's a 24-hour operation to keep up with our export demands and meeting our farmer obligations, helping them out as much as we can. I definitely want to give a shout-out to all of the farmers that I do business with. I always appreciate your support. You guys are amazing, and I really enjoy our relationship.
Well, we appreciate just the role that you play in agriculture in Northeast Montana. Thank you both for being here. Tim, thanks for sticking around. We got to check in with Ken Adelblue real quick, who's standing by with one of these booths here at the trade show before we have our next break coming up.
If you're involved in agriculture, you probably know about the Trader's Dispatch and talking with Susie Binzing, who's involved with putting all that together. Tell us about this publication. You made a joke earlier with me. You said papers tend to be getting smaller except for the Trader's Dispatch. It just gets bigger and bigger all the time.
Yeah, we're really fortunate that we have faithful advertisers and faithful subscribers. The Trader's Dispatch has been around for actually 57 years and 25 years, excuse me, as the Trader's Dispatch. We actually started as the Prairie Star in the basement of Brent Gaylord's home in Valier, Montana, and it has just taken off from there, and we're very excited to be continuing to produce something that people just rely on. We've been told that it's the farmer's Bible, that it's read cover to cover every month, despite the fact that it averages over 100 pages. And so we're happy to be doing it and hope we can continue for a long, long time.
Tell us about, you've obviously mentioned farmers, ranchers are very interested in it. But if somebody isn't getting the Trader's Dispatch, how do they go about that?
So they can go to our website at www.tradersdispatch.com. We have an online subscription form, which is frankly how most people are subscribing anymore, unless they come to a trade show or they happen to be visiting and see it on somebody's coffee table or kitchen table or something like that. So but that is probably the easiest way. Or they're welcome to call our office in Conrad at 406-271-5533 as well.
Susie Binzing, Trader's Dispatch. Great event. Glad you're here. And it was nice talking to you.
Thank you so much.
Super publication, too. I mean, it's thick. It really is. Yeah, and it's monthly. You do a lot of work on that. Thank you, Susie. Appreciate that. From the KATQ Northeast Montana Farm Expo, that's in Sheridan County. The county seat's Plentywood, Montana. The county itself has a population of about 4,000 overall. It's not the most populated place in Montana, but you look at the value of agriculture in Montana or in this area, it's $1 billion. Colter Brown with us, Northern Ag Network. Ken Adelblue as well, standing by. That's $1 billion, Colter, when you talk about the crops that we're talking, you know, we've been discussing here, also the livestock and the ranching. Ton of economic value right here in this little area.
It sure is. Northeast Montana, it's a special place, and especially just agriculture is just a little bit different here. But we're going to step away from ag for just a minute, Tom. I know you're shocked.
Will they allow you to do that?
Pick up your jaw off the floor, yep. Because also we're trying to just get a feel of what's going on here in Northeast Montana, and there's a big event happening right now this weekend. It's the Freud Scholarship Tournament, and Don Elvisos joins us here. Don, one of the organizers of it. This is a neat event. Tell a little about what the Freud Scholarship Tournament is, Don.
Well, it originated in 1984 out of respect for a local athlete who liked kids. He was tragically killed in an accident. So we started this scholarship tournament in his memory, and it's gone on very well. This is the 41st year.
41st, wow.
We are the longest running men's independent basketball tournament in the state of Montana.
Wow. So what are we talking? Teams? How much money are we raising?
Well, we give out this is for a scholarship. In the first 2-3 years, we had to wait because we could only spend the accrued interest legally. And so since we give our first scholarship in 1986, we've awarded $111,500 to local students.
Wow.
And this extends from Freud, Medicine Lake, Culbertson, Williston, Sydney, all up along the High Line. Any student can apply for it, and we have a criteria. We go through a committee and pick our scholarships every year.
And the tournament's going on, I mean, not right this moment, but it'll kick off again this afternoon. You had a Calcutta. I know Tim McGreevy told me he was going to participate in the Calcutta, so you're raising money, and what a great way to do it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun and a lot of work, of course, and We need young people to step up and help us because people like me have been in it for forever, and we're getting that. It's working out fine. It's a lot of work, but we enjoy it.
Well, that's, I think, what's great about Northeast Montana, the way people lean in and help each other. Yeah. If you want to have an event, you got to step up and be there.
Yeah, and this is a big city of 150 people, so we don't have too much to pick from.
Montana, yeah. Yeah. Hey, thanks for doing that. I appreciate that. Those things are a ton of fun. They really are. And keep that going.
Let's check in with Ken Adelblue. I know he's bouncing around the trade show yet again.
Ken Adelblue again. We're going to chase him over this one to, we heard about this today, Great Falls Truck. So, Ken, go ahead.
To be talking with Steve Raskin. He is the owner of it seems like an incredible, incredible business, Ag Trucks and Equipment, based out of Great Falls. Kind of obvious in the name, but tell us what you do for your business.
At Ag Trucks and Equipment, we build large self-propelled spray systems for agriculture. Our specialty, what we hang our hat on, is all generic parts, all domestic parts, parts available at your local parts store, nothing proprietary, no young person with a laptop required for service.
That is very, very cool. And how long have you been doing this then?
About 25 years. 25 years, we have machines all over the eastern Washington, north central, all the way to eastern Montana. We have machines in Canada and western Oklahoma.
We talk about Ag Trucks and Equipment. What about the truck portion of it? Can you tell us about that?
Well, the machine is actually called an Ag Truck because it's literally just an oversized truck chassis. They're easy to maintain. We encourage people to work on their own equipment, which doesn't seem to be the way of the world anymore. So, and then ours are very long-lived. They're not a hydrostatic, hydraulically driven. They're mechanical drive as such a big truck. So they're easy to service and maintain, long lifetime.
And as you said, all domestic. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Is that going to help you with the situation? I mean, I don't want to get too technical with the tariffs and everything. Yeah.
We're so far ahead of the game now. You know, we'll see how that all plays out. You know, currently I just think it's kind of a big pillow fight. But we'll see. But, yeah, we're pretty much all domestic. We do want to move into Canada more, so that'll come into play as well as the exchange rate. But we thrive on machines that don't break down because they're built with all recognizable components that customers understand. Yet we can still install all the latest, greatest ag technology, precision ag type equipment. So,
all right. Well, pleasure to meet you, and congratulations on the great work you're doing there, Steve Raskin, with Ag Trucks and Equipment. Very nice to meet you, and have fun at the event.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
all right,
Ken.
We'll send it back to Tom and Coulter.
Good job, Ken, out there amongst all these vendors. A ton of them here as well. We're back center stage here with Coulter Brown, Northern Ag Network. Coulter.
In agriculture in Northeast Montana and a big supporter of the KETQ Northeast Montana Farm Expo is Pro Co-op. And we've got a couple of the folks from there joining us. First, Bailey Christofferson, kind of an agronomist, but also managing the precision ag program at Pro Co-op. Bailey, kind of describe what that means. Remember, we're talking to an audience that's not all farmers here. So what is precision agriculture? How has that evolved in recent years?
So yeah, precision agriculture is basically, we're defining management zones within a field, you know, pulling out those poor producing areas and those high producing areas, and then managing the fertilizer more efficiently. You know, I figured out a few years ago that in poor producing areas, we were probably over fertilizing by $25 to $30 an acre, right? And then on the high end of the field, we have no idea what our potential is. So just kind of reallocating those resources to different areas of the field.
Well, with some of the machines that we have today, the technology is just out of this world, what we're able to do. And so you're able to combine what the machines can do and trying to be more efficient, decrease our input costs. Hopefully you use less inputs, be more purposeful with them. Talk a little about what you're doing with variable rate application and what that could do for farmers.
Yeah, absolutely. So just the other day, we started working with a producer, Charlie Cahill, on trying to do some variable rate herbicide applications, just being more direct with some of those residual herbicides and what rates we're using on different soil types, just trying to get more precise with that weed control and pulling back where we don't need it and pouring it to it where we do.
Also joining us from Pro Co-op is Jeannie Rue. Jeannie, you are a big role in this Farm Expo here for KETQ. Talk about what the planning that goes into this and trying to draw producers in.
Expo is that we want to have a trade show that people want to come to. We want to have speakers that draw people in the door, but we want to make sure there's time for both. So you're not just in the speaker room, you've got time to go back and forth. Try to hit a diverse group of audiences, you know, have something that's more maybe ranch oriented, more farm oriented. We have a tree planting thing this morning. started off with some pretty heavy like dirt and soils agronomy. So mix it up a little bit. Our goal is to create a real social atmosphere. So when you go to the meeting afterwards, you're getting together with people that are interested in that material, maybe cracking a beer, maybe just having some coffee. There's always great pie from the Angel Tree Project here, so maybe it's a piece of pie, but really creating an atmosphere where everybody's coming together. The vendors are people you want to do business with. We're trying to get people that are very actively involved. This year we have some great stuff in the parking lot to go with it. Ibarasa brought down a spider drill, which is one of the newest pieces of no-till drill technology, and they've got that unfolded in the parking lot. That's a really crazy piece of equipment that just is hard to imagine even 10 years ago that we would have that technology to put seed in the ground in a no-till setting. The other piece of equipment that's here is we had a guy from Williston bring a spray drone, and he's put it up in the sky a couple times so everybody can see it. He's not doing crop spraying. He's doing a lot of like weed control, weed district type spraying, and he also is doing some livestock stuff, and I think he's finding a real receptive audience to some of that. He's licensed in Montana this coming year, and so there's stuff in the building, there's stuff in the parking lot. We've got a 700 horsepower tractor. We've got, if you want to see big farming, there's lots of it going on here.
You bet, big farming. I love it. Well, we're coming up on a break here, but I want to ask you, we've talked with a lot of growers today, and they're telling us about challenges they're facing, input costs, the price of grain. What are you doing at Pro Co-op? These guys are your lifeblood. You got to keep them in business. How are you trying to help them survive a very uncertain year?
I think it really comes down to each individual person comes to us with their operation and what their budgets are, what their needs are. Bailey and I work really hard to be listening and not giving everybody the same answer. This is how we grow peas, and this is just how we're going to do it. What are your weeds? Where is the peas going on those fields? How are we going to manage that situation for you? Let's do the soil testing so we know where the fertilizer should go. If you got to spend money on fertilizer, if you know where you're putting it and you know why, you sleep a lot better and your banker doesn't get after you quite so much. So it's really an individual program. Pro Co-op prides itself on service, and we think that means one person at a time, a prescription for each budget and each operation. These years, this isn't my first drought, and it's not my first commodity downturn. And we get through these years by doing it together. The worst thing we can do is to just let the season happen without being engaged. And it's hard to be engaged on a dry year. I mean, it's a lot easier just to shut your door and go to the lake. But the farming is happening anyways, and the best thing we can do is to do it together.
Well, we appreciate what you guys are doing to support farmers, helping to put on this event, the KETQ Northeast Montana Farm Expo. It's a big deal up here.
We are here at the KETQ Northeast Montana Farm Expo. Coulter Brown, Ken Adelblue, Tom Schultz alongside. Had to have a few words with Greg Simon, who's the new general manager, the new do-it-all guy for KETQ. How are you doing, Greg?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm not sure which hat to wear today.
Well, you can't take any of them off for any length of time. I wanted to, give your mom our best regards as well. Please do. We do that on the air. Hi, Bonnie. I hope you're listening. And also Bruce Lapke. And then Bruce, yep. I hope you're listening up there as well. I know we lost Bruce in this last year, and he was a big part of this. His name comes
Huge.
Up an awful lot
yep.
here. Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely a missed fixture.
Yeah.
I think first thing Tuesday I had about a half dozen questions where the big guy was, and they hadn't heard yet, so a little tough.
That's tough. That would be a little bit tough, yeah. How are things been going? I mean, you had a long career, good career in IT and other adventures. You're here doing other adventures
yep.
as well. But you're a guy who came back to your hometown here and took over this radio station because...
It needed it. When Mom retired, it was kind of there's kind of a void. Nobody really stepped up to take the position, and so they asked me to, and I was kind of a little leery at first because it's a big daunting task. I mean, it's a being in the public eye a lot. I was really nervous about it, but I took it in stride and went into it just with my background, and I got a lot of feedback right away. People were loving it, and so that really encouraged me to keep going. And I still get feedback. I got some feedback earlier today that, you know, people are liking the show. I mean, we had 250 people yesterday, so
nice.
My goal is at some point I want to be able to sell the KCs out of food on the first day. you know, so I think that's about 600 people on the first day.
You're goal-oriented, too,
yes,
I can tell, yeah.
Well, and Greg, what is...
local radio mean to this community? I mean, it's your job, really, to keep people connected across Northeast Montana.
It is. It is. And I come from a background also of disaster preparedness. And looking at the disasters we've had on the eastern side of the United States and hearing the stories that local radio stations played there, so I look at it that way, too. Like you said, it connects everybody, not just with Billings and Great Falls and Helena, but within the community. If somebody wants to give a shout-out to somebody, hey, happy birthday to make their day, we're here for that, you know. So, and then you got the local sports, and it all ties it all together. And it's the community, you know. I mean, really, that is the thing. I mean, a lot of people are like, well, it's no, the radio is your community, and it has to reflect that community.
Let me ask this then. What can the community do? Because I think they believe that here. They have supported that as a community adventure. What can they do to help you now?
They're actually doing a really good job. I get a lot of feedback from a lot of the people that have listened for a long time. A lot of the businessmen in town have been real open and real honest with stuff as far as what works, what doesn't work, how things work. Because there's a lot of intricate relationships that I didn't understand were there when I took over. And so you have, you know, the newspaper and the Orpheum, which are another part of our community. You know, those guys gave feedback into it. So it was really nice to have that. And so they are actually really supportive. They are doing everything, really, you know. I'm just really surprised at how well the community supports the radio station.
I'm really glad to hear that, Bruce.
It's okay. Craig.
Yeah, you probably are getting out of here a little bit. And thank you for hosting us here, too. You've just been a great friend to us.
Oh, yeah, and you guys have been a great friend to us, and thank you for coming out. We love listening to you out here. So
thank you for that.
It's
super
so much
stuff.
Fun. We've loved it.
It is. Yeah.
Coulter, Ken, thank you guys as well. Everybody here, all right, farm on.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.